taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me. You know, it's interesting. I titled today's episode, COVID Aftermath. But I want to make a point. You see, what we're dealing with is not the aftermath of the novel coronavirus or Corona COVID-2, whatever they call it. And it's not the aftermath of the disease COVID-19. No, we're dealing with the aftermath of the disease of tyranny that has used a virus and its associated disease to scare the pants off of people to take power. That's what we're dealing with today. COVID is not so much the disease of the lungs, it's become a disease of the mind, a mind of the American people, and of the politicians we hire to exercise our sovereignty. And that's what I want to discuss today, because there is plenty of news around this topic. I mean, there's even been a new word, a new phrase in the American lexicon to describe it. Fear porn. The idea that the news media, the social media, and those in government are not so much trying to inform the American people, but scare them. This is nothing new. Michael Crichton wrote an excellent book called The State of Fear, where he saw the exact same tactic used that time against global warming and climate change. I mean, how else would you explain the fact that so many people who've already been vaccinated still remain fearful? Isn't the purpose of the vaccine to protect you from the virus and from the disease that it causes? But we've become irrational with our fear of COVID-19. This is proven by the fact that since shortly after the disease appeared on our shores, we've known it to be relatively non-life-threatening for the vast majority of the population. That unless you are old and have other comorbidities, such as diabetes, your chances of surviving are, what, 99%, 98-point-something percent? And for that, we have been so frightened, we have voluntarily handed over our rights. We have given over our rights to tyrants in state capitals and in city halls and in Washington, D.C. We are now a subjected people because we're afraid of a virus that we stand a 99% chance of surviving. Unless you're elderly. I mean, if you are old, if you have comorbidities, if you have other things that make you a higher risk, I can certainly understand the desire to be vaccinated, to wear masks, to take precautions. That makes sense. That's called being a rational human being. But to shut down the economy of some of our largest cities, of our states, to focus without any context on the new positive tests, and ignore the fact that 99%+ of those people will survive is nothing but instilling fear. Because when you scare people, guess what? They'll do anything. I saw an article describing, I guess it was an interview that David Lionheart had with the New York Times. And Lionheart opens a story about a judge and a Yale University law professor, Guido Calabresi, who for 30 years has been telling his students a tale he crafted about God, who came to society, proposed an invention that would make their lives better in nearly every way. It would afford them extra quality time with loved ones and enable them to see sights and perform tasks they wouldn't otherwise be able to. The cost of this invention? The god would select 1,000 young people to strike dead. The professor then would pose the question to his students. Would you take the deal? Ask yourself, would you take the deal? Would you take this invention if you knew that 1,000 young people would die so that you could have it? Now, the students almost always answered no. They would not sacrifice 1,000 people for their own convenience. The professor would then ask, what's the difference between this and the automobile? See, we accept the dangers of automobiles every day. You go out, and as I was teaching my daughter to drive, I tried to instill in her the responsibility of operating a vehicle. I said, you are in charge of a 2-ton death machine. This machine is capable of killing dozens of people, and you're in control. Even if you're not looking to cause problems, even if your intentions aren't evil, you go out in the roads, and who knows what may happen? Someone could lose control and cause an accident. Someone could run into you. Someone could make a mistake. Someone could be running from the police. Someone could be intoxicated. You could have a mechanical failure. There are dozens and dozens of ways simply operating a motor vehicle or simply being in a motor vehicle in operation could cost you your life. Yet we accept that risk, most of us, each and every day. And now we have those in government telling us you can't exercise your rights because one person might get sick with a disease that they stand a 99% chance of surviving. It's irrational fear. It's instilled by focusing on the bad news, by not putting things in context, and by the gullibility of the American people to listen without filters, to listen without analysis, to trust, but never verify. We see the infamous Dr. Fauci. I'm sorry, he may be a medical doctor. He may have a license. This man is a political bureaucrat and has been the last, 20 years, 30 years as a political bureaucrat. He's a politician. And he has lied to us so often, yet people still pay attention to what he says. Now, he makes the point that vaccine passports are not going to be mandated by the federal government. I would say they won't be mandated yet because there would be an uproar. But look at what else is going on. Okay, they're not being mandated, but guess what? Apparently, Erie County in New York, which is where the city of Buffalo resides and where the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres play, they're gonna mandate vaccines if you want to go to a Bills game. You heard of no shirt, no shoes, no service? Well, now you're going to see signs that say no vaccine, no entry. We don't need the federal government to do this because now we have, in this case, a county government that's doing it. We have a county government that's saying you must have a vaccine to get onto public property. And you must show us your papers to do it. Tell me this doesn't sound like some B World War II movie. Show me your papers. I guess I can't do a good German accent. We have reports of up to 10 major corporations that are working to create these vaccine passports that can be mandated on people, either by public offices or by private offices, by private companies. IBM, MasterCard, Salesforce, Oracle, Microsoft, the Mayo Clinic, Evernorth, Healthvana, Carbon Health, Athena. These are all large corporations that are trying to establish vaccine passports and pushing for them to become mandatory. See, why is that important? Well, look at what they did in New York. New York established their own vaccine passport called the Excelsior Pass. One more reason why I'm glad I don't live in New York anymore. But you see, here's the problem. Let's say you use your Excelsior Pass and you want to go to, a New York Giants game. Now, for those of you who are not familiar, the New York Giants actually play in New Jersey. Does that mean that New Jersey is going to have access to the Excelsior Pass in New York? Maybe what we, when we, what's going to happen when we have all these different companies and all these different states and all these different entities with all of their different passports, and none of them talk to each other? How long do you think there's going to be a call for a federal mandate to consolidate these vaccine passports to make your life easier? So you don't have to have 12 different applications to prove your papers. How long do you think that's going to happen? This is coming, America. Vaccine passports are coming, not because they're going to be mandated, until there's been enough push. For example, Yale, Columbia, and the University of California system are going to demand vaccinations if you want to attend class. Now, Yale and Columbia, I believe, are private schools. I do not believe they get government funding, although they do accept government grants. But the University of California system is a public school. We have a public entity, another public entity, by the way, demanding you get vaccinated. Now, today, the vaccine is still experimental. So you're saying if you want your child to go to one of these universities, they're going to have to take an experimental vaccine where the side effects have had no long-term tests, using a new process that has no long-term track record to fall back on? This is not the consequence of the virus. This is the consequence of tyrants and serfs. See, when this all started and we started hearing about these lockdowns and mass mandates and you know, essential and non-essential businesses, there were a few people that were screaming, no, no, this is tyranny. This is how tyranny enters. We let it in little bits and then it grows. And everyone said, no, 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 we need 2 weeks to flatten the curve. We just need to suspend your rights for a little while so that we can keep this under control, because it's for your own good. It's for your own safety. You plebs are just too ignorant to know what's good for you, and we must mandate it. Now it's been over a year. And there are still places with mass mandates, even though they violate public mass mandates, government-issued mass mandates, violate the Constitution of the United States and pretty much every state in the Union. And they're still here. We still have Dr. Fauci and the CDC telling us when we can and cannot get together and under what conditions. The director of the CDC recommends Michigan lock down because people are testing positive for the virus. Are people dying? Shouldn't that be the reason why you'd even consider locking yourself in your house, locking yourself in your apartment, because people are dying and you don't want to be one of them? No. No, the virus numbers are up. And oh, by the way, do a little research on the tests. Most of the tests that are issued, at least what I've heard from quote-unquote experts, don't actually test to see if you're sick or contagious. I think it's the PCR test simply says you've been exposed. Okay. You know, there's another test, I guess, could also identify another coronavirus as the SARS-CoV-2. So based on this, we're being told to lock down again, to shut down again, that maybe we'll open up again. This is what happens when the American people do nothing. When people start to take their rights, they keep taking and taking and taking. That's why, as much as I blame the tyrants in state houses and Washington, D.C. and in city halls, I blame the American people, because they let this happen. And whether they did it because of their ignorance of their rights in the Constitution, or the fact that they're just sheep, that they are unwilling to govern themselves, does it really matter? Because not only did we have tyrants pushing this, we are hiring more. Trump was not for public mask mandates, for lockdowns, shutdowns, or for vaccine passports. Yet look at what's coming out of the Biden administration. More calls for lockdowns, more calls for shutdowns, more demands that your rights be suspended because someone feels unsafe. A question I am frequently asked is about the mask mandates, the lockdowns, the shutdowns. And my position is really quite simple. A mask mandate deprives you of liberty without due process of law. A government-issued mask mandate deprives you of your liberty to go about your life unmolested without due process of law. Therefore, it's a violation of the Fifth Amendment. If it's done by a state or subordinate of the state, it is a violation of the 14th Amendment. Therefore, it is not only unconstitutional, therefore void, it is illegal, and in fact, it is a criminal act to enforce that because 18 U.S. Code 242 says it is a federal crime under color of law to deprive someone of a right protected by the U.S. Constitution or law of the United States. But we still have them. Back last spring, when this was still relatively new, I was doing an event at a county nearby, and just before the event, the county issued a mask mandate. So when I showed up, the coordinator came by and said, listen, you know, we're on private property, we should be okay, but, you know, don't, and I said, I don't care, the mask mandate's void, it's illegal, it's meaningless. And I handed her a piece of paper, a placard I'd put together, that shows not only the rights that are violated, not only the Constitution is violated, but the laws that are violated. This person's response, if the police show up, we're sending them to your table. I said, be my guest. You see, I had done the work. I knew the Constitution. I knew it was a violation. So when these started popping up, I didn't take long for me to find the actual language of the violations so that I could stand. But that's government issue. That's public mask mandates, right? Where we're talking about public land, we're talking about being out in public, or any mandate issued by a government entity, they are illegal. And according to both Alexander Hamilton and Federalist Papers number 78, and Chief Justice Marshall from the Supreme Court case Marbury versus Madison, those actions are void. They're empty. They're meaningless. You are not being disobedient to ignore them, you're obeying the supreme law of the land. But the question often comes up, what about private mask mandates? What about private businesses? Can they require that you wear a mask? Well, to understand this, we need to understand one basic concept of rights, at least what I call basic concept of rights. You are free to exercise your right until it infringes on the right of another. I'm going to repeat that. You can exercise your right as you see fit until it infringes on the right of another. So what does that have to do with private mask mandates? Well, a private business is the property of its owner. Not just the land that it's on, the business itself is property. James Madison did an excellent essay on the rights of property, and I'll probably cover it in the next few days because I think it's important to what's going on in this world. So if a business is private property, ask yourself, how would you act if you were on the other side? You show up to a store, whether it's a big box store or a mom and pop store or something in the middle, you show up and there's a sign that says, if you don't wear a mask, no entry. We'll flip this around. Let's say you're sitting at home, and for whatever reason, you want people to wear masks. Maybe you have a family member with an immune deficiency. And for their safety, you want everybody that comes into the building to wear a mask. So just imagine your neighbor shows up. Maybe they want to bring over a cake, or they come to play cards, or they're just there to visit. And they look at the sign on your front door that says, "We require masks on everybody who enters." Imagine how you would feel. Say, "Well, I have rights. I don't need a mask," and they barge through your door. And you tell them, no, you need to wear a mask. It is unsafe for me. I don't care. I have rights. I can do what I want. You can't prevent me. You can't force me to wear a mask. You can't prevent me from entering. How would you feel? Now imagine that it's not your home. It's your business. And for whatever reason, you've decided that you need people to wear masks in your business. And someone barges in, demands that they have the legal right to violate your property rights. This isn't theoretical. A lady in Texas was arrested not once, but twice, because she refused to honor the mask mandate at private businesses under the incorrect assumption that because this happened to be in Texas, that because the governor had lifted the public mask mandates, that gave her the right to do whatever she wanted on someone else's property, including go around without a mask. Now, usually there's a couple of things that people pop up when we're having this discussion. And the first is the idea of what's called a public accommodation law. The idea that because you open your doors to the public, it is not your private property anymore. Oh, that's not the way it's described, but they're saying because you're open to the public, you no longer have control over your property. Public accommodation laws are illegal. They violate the Constitution because they deprive the business owner of the control of their property without due process of law. Now, the other thing that's often brought up is, well, what about the laws that, public accommodations for black people? You know, when there were laws that, you could not put a sign up to prevent black people coming in. I said, those are illegal too. That type of discrimination is immoral. It is unethical. It's disgusting, at least to me. But it's not illegal. And before you go shouting Jim Crow laws, remember, Jim Crow laws were laws instituted by governments to mandate discrimination. Jim Crow laws were not so much private organizations. Now, I'm sure, I know, there were private businesses that either used the laws or used their property rights to discriminate against people. Why would you do business with them? Just because something is legal doesn't mean it's right. Why would you support a business owner that wants to discriminate against you? Because that's what happens when you force them to take your business. You're handing them money to do this. When I go to a business and I, first of all, I love seeing the signs that nobody follows. They walk right by them, no mask, nobody enforces it. To me, that's a joke. That's a perfect example of what's happened to the rule of law in this country. We don't care. We don't care about the rules anymore. We ignore them if we don't like them. But if I walk up and they say, "You must do this," I have a serious question to ask. And that is, what's more important to me? My rights, the rights of my family, the rights of my children, or the rights or the access to this building? Is it more important that you get that cup of coffee or that donut or that you shop at that store than your rights? Because if they're willing to infringe on your rights, if they're not willing to protect their own rights and they're willing to infringe on your rights over a mask, what happens when the vaccine mandates come out? What happens when you have to show your papers to enter a store? What happens when you have to show a certain party membership, say, like in other communist countries? And I say other because we are fast becoming a communist country. What happens then? See, I'm going to be traveling to North Dakota this summer, and I refuse to do business with airlines that have shown themselves to not protect my rights. Whether that, and again, this isn't about, you know, a lot of people talk about their United and Delta's reaction to the Georgia election law. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the basic idea that I should be able to go about my life without being assaulted, without being forced to show my papers. I have medical reasons why I have not gotten a vaccine. Does that mean I'm a second-class citizen? Does that mean I'm going to have to go around with a V with a circular slash on my shirt like the Jews did in Nazi Germany? Because for my own medical reasons, I refuse to get protected by a vaccine. I'm not saying you can't be protected. That's fine. Do what you want. We live in a free country, supposedly. But I don't trust them. So I won't do business with them. I will not fly to North Dakota for this event because I don't trust the airlines. My liberty is worth more than the time I will save to fly rather than drive. Now, hey, if there's an airline that says, hey, we will guarantee you we will not institute mask mandates or other things, I'd fly them. I have nothing against airlines. I'd fly them. It's these idiots that are running the airlines that are capitulating to tyrannical government and abusing the rights of their customers, either because they want to make a buck or they're just too scared to stand up for what is right. So I wanted to remind you that America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have these apps, these wonderful apps. You have an Apple, an Android, an Alexa. You can listen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And now you can even listen to the podcast. So if you can't catch me live or any of my other broadcasters live and other hosts, you can find them on the podcast. Just check out AmericaOutLoud.com, and I'll catch you after the break.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. We are here at the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. You know, I've been on the America Out Loud Network for a couple weeks now, and it's been very enjoyable. I hope you're enjoying these messages as much as I am putting them together, and I'm enjoying listening to other hosts. I want to give a shout out to Dan Barnowski. He has a program, Frankly Dan, Saturday and Sunday at 9 a.m. with encores at 4. And I want to thank him, one, for mentioning me. I'm glad to hear that he's been listening, but I've been listening to some of his stuff, and it really is good information, looking at the state of our nation and really asking the question, what are we going to do about it? As I said, we are suffering not under the aftermath, the after effects of, say, a disease. It's not the COVID-19 disease. It's the tyrants in government that are using COVID to destroy rights and liberty in America. Either because they think they know better. They think they have the right to tell the American people because they think the American people are too stupid. Or simply because they want power. Another perfect example is Michigan. Now, Michigan wants to expand, or I guess has expanded their mask mandates to children as young as 2. I would ask the governor, the health director, all the people in Michigan that have come up with this nonsense to take a look at the CDC data. Children do not get sick from COVID, almost never, rarely, very, very rarely do children get sick from COVID-19. And there is zero evidence that they transmit COVID-19 to others, even adults. So why in heaven's name are you trying to stick a mask on a 2-year-old? Who are you protecting? You're not. You're indoctrinating them to be subjects, to be serfs of government, to do as they're told or else. This is not dealing with COVID-19. This is the exercise of power. And it's about time we, the American people, put our public servants back in their place. Now, not every place has gone quite as crazy, although a lot of states have. Wisconsin's Supreme Court struck down their mask mandate. Now, what's interesting is they struck it down apparently not because it was unwise. In fact, quoting from the opinion, the question in this case is not whether the governor acted wisely, it is whether he acted lawfully. We conclude he did not. See, that's the point. All of these mask mandates are illegal. They deprive you of your liberty without due process of law. Yet, they're allowed to stand. And I think they're allowed to stand because the American people are waiting for someone else to save them. They're waiting for the court to save them or for some politician to save them. They have the power in their own hands to save themselves, but they refuse to exercise it because they're afraid. Because they've been told that they have no power, that it's up to someone else to save them. It reminds me of a story, as I understand it, in India, when they want to train a young elephant. You know, they don't want the elephants wandering off. They use them for work. They use them like tractors in America. What they'll do with a young elephant is they will put a cuff, basically, on their foot. They'll put shackles on their foot and they'll chain them to a tree so that when they pull, they can't get away. And, of course, I'm sure it's fairly painful. But it doesn't take too long before the elephant realizes that when they've got that shackle on their leg, they're not supposed to go anywhere. To the point where they don't even need to put a chain on it anymore. Simply the act of putting the restraint on the elephant is enough for them to not move. And I think that's a good metaphor for the American people. We have been so trained to not question government, that we refuse to even consider it anymore. We wait for someone else. We wait for another government agency to save us. If the governor or the executive infringes on our rights, we beg the courts to save us. If the courts won't do it, we beg the legislature to save us. How about we wake up and save ourselves? How about we recognize that these are illegal, they're immoral, they are void because they violate the supreme law of the land, and we simply ignore them? Now, Benjamin Franklin said when they signed the Declaration of Independence, "We must all hang together, or we will assuredly hang separately." And that's an important point. See, when one of us stands up and says no, well, they're an easy target. When 5, 10, 50, 100 of us stand up and say no, that gets a lot harder. Just look at what's been happening in Portland. 11 months, Portland has had riots, and they've got away with it because of numbers. Now, I'm not saying we need to act violently. In fact, I discourage violence unless necessary to save yourself, to save your life, or to save you from serious bodily injury. But what happens when that person who stands up doesn't stand alone? What happens when that small business owner that stands for right and liberty is joined by members of their community? I think this is a perfect time for small businesses to stand up. We complain, you know, so many people complain about the big box stores and the big corporations and how they're destroying small business. Well, here's the perfect opportunity. Small businesses, you can have this advice for free. Open yourselves up. Advertise, identify, put signs in that you respect the rights of your customers. That you will not bow to illegal government pressure to infringe on their rights. And see what happens to your business. Now, I live here in Tennessee, and my governor has been, some good, some bad. Apparently, he's announced that he supports allowing big businesses to require vaccine passports. I ask, why big businesses? Does the size of the business matter? But there's legislation moving through Tennessee to implement a ban on government-mandated vaccine passports. That is good. But again, not a ban on private companies. Why? Because those are private companies. That is their private property. You cannot deprive them of their property without due process of law. That is a crime. Now, while Governor Lee may support allowing them, the question is, does he support them actually doing it? See, the law says a private company can set standards. The Constitution says that as private property owners, they can enjoy their property how they see fit. But the question is, not only what does the government support, the question is, what do the people support? Do the people support having to show their papers to do business, to shop, to go to the grocery store, to go to the hardware store, to go to a meeting at a private company? Do the people support it? And will the people do something about it? Now, I got one more vaccine, but this is actually a commentary. I saw this and it was great. With all the complaints lately that voter ID is racist, why are so many of the socialists pushing vaccine passports? If a photo ID to vote is racist, isn't a photo ID to go to a grocery store racist? To go to a sporting event racist? To enter a private premises, isn't that racist? That just shows the irrationality of these claims of racism for voter ID laws. I mean, let's face it, to a racist, everything is about race. And this is just another example of that. So here's an interesting question. If we are dealing with the aftermath, not of the of COVID-19, but of a government takeover with COVID-19 as an excuse, what can we see? What can we learn from what's happened? For example, guess which state has done the worst in the quote-unquote COVID-19 pandemic? That's right, it's my old home, the Empire State, run like the Roman Empire, New York. They've had the most job losses per capita during the pandemic. They've had one of the highest rates of excess deaths during the pandemic. Their economy is a disaster thanks to the pandemic. their reliance on tourism and hospitality has taken severe hits because of their reaction to the pandemic. In other words, Governor Cuomo has shot their citizens in the foot. Yet he's still there. Oh, I know, he's facing legal challenges, but you know, you rarely see people talk about having him removed for contributing to the deaths of thousands of seniors by exposing them to a virus that is deadly to the elderly, at least a higher rate of death among the elderly than among the general population. And New York is not the only one. A report, who was this published by? Global State of Small Business Report, found that both New York and Pennsylvania maintained the highest rate of small business closures at 31%. Nearly one-third of small businesses were driven out of business, if in part, if not in whole, by the government's reaction to COVID-19. Let's stop blaming a piece of protein surrounded by fat for what these people did. Because if there was any intelligence, any science actually used in reaction to this disease, the states wouldn't have shut down. Sure, we would have put in some extra protections for those most at risk. Maybe we would have put some restrictions in nursing homes. Nursing homes would have said, you know, we need certain protections because their population is more at risk. Sure, we would have done that. Maybe we would have done it for other groups, you know, again, those with immunodeficiencies. So maybe certain hospitals would have wings where in order to gain access and to visit people, you would have to go through extra procedures. Again, to save people who are actually in danger. But that's not what we did. We punished the innocent American people to save this small percentage that in many cases looks like we may not have saved anyway. If this is right, if New York had that many excess deaths, if they lead the state in excess deaths, apparently locking down, shutting down, and requiring masks may not have been the answer. Now, granted, New York City has a very dense population, and there are other issues with that. But again, are we going to deal with the scientific method? Are we going to learn from our mistakes? Or are we going to continue to repeat them? Why? Well, Trend Micro published a report, and they said the five places with the hardest lockdowns, the District of Columbia, New York, Michigan, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, had the heaviest caseloads. The hardest, now again, correlation does not mean causation, but you have to ask, when you have states with similar population demographics, one locks down hard, one not so much, the one that locks down hard has a higher caseload than the one that doesn't. Now you have to ask, is that correlation or is that causation? In other words, did the lockdowns cause the disease or did they lock down because they had more cases of the disease? But the question is, again, is it legal? Because I've had people that, well, if we didn't lock down, there'd be millions of dead. That's only if you believe the American people are stupid. See, it's one thing to say, listen, there's a coronavirus and this seems to help stop the spread. This seems to help stop the spread. We expect you to be grown adults and take your own precautions based on your situation. If you assume that people would not have taken precautions unless the government enforced it, well, then you already believe the American people are too stupid to govern themselves, that they need a master, that they are in effect, slaves. But what's interesting is we look at all of these effects, all of these outcomes, the destruction of economies, the destructions of businesses, the internment of the American people, the begging government for permission to live our lives. And you know, the one thing we don't hear a lot talked about, well, depending on where you are, you don't hear a lot talked about, the destruction of free speech by these tyrants. And by tyrants, I don't, in this case, mean the people in government. I mean the people that we have trusted with our communication. Whether it's people being deplatformed, being having their accounts closed on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, because they happen to mention, oh, certain inconvenient facts, is a destruction of free speech. Now, it's legal destruction of free speech, but it's still destruction of free speech. There's a gentleman who tweeted, the moral of coronavirus 19 will be that social contagion via social networks is more dangerous than biological contagion. I believe it was Mark Changizi. Sorry if I mispronounced your name. He tweeted that back in March of 2020. And he thought, I agree. To me, that seems obvious. Now, the idea that you say, well, it's to even bring that up will get you deplatformed. In fact, Mr. Changizi says he was pilloried for his statement. We're seeing more damage done to the American people via these social networks than anything that's been done by the actual COVID-19 virus, at least on a mass scale. I mean, yes, any death is a tragedy to the family. But we go back to the professor's question. Would you trade your freedom for protection from a disease that you stand a 99% chance of surviving? See, what we have is we have this fear-mongering, this fear porn have made people so irrationally afraid, and they've been fed with so much misinformation. There are people that believe that if you get coronavirus, you have a 50-50 chance of dying. That asymptomatic people are transmitters of the disease, that the young are at risk, that the immunity process doesn't apply as it normally would, that COVID would leave you with chronic health issues. For this, we destroyed our country. And we're finding it's very simple to find with just a little bit of research. This is all false. Now, I'm not a doctor, and I don't even play one on TV, but it didn't take very hard for me to actually look at the CDC data. You go to the CDC's COVID page and just look at the numbers and do a little simple basic mathematics. I'm looking at the site today, and it says there have been 569,272 deaths in the United States. And everybody focuses on that number. And I agree. That is 570,000 families that have been tragically impacted by this disease. And that's sad. But there's also been 31,883,289 cases in the U.S. Now, if I just take that 569,272 and divide it by 31,883,289, I find out that there's approximately 1.8 of the cases have led to death. Now, this takes zero consideration of people who have died for other things, for depression, for alcohol abuse, for drug abuse. Our economies have been destroyed. Our businesses are being destroyed. Our liberties and freedoms are being destroyed. Not by a disease, unless you consider tyranny and tyrants to be a disease. The idea that By getting a government paycheck, you're smart enough to tell other people how to live their lives. Now, that might be a mental disease. But actually, more importantly, the disease in the American heart that says we must submit to government, even when that government is full of tyrants, even when that government is breaking the law, even when that government is doing what they're not allowed to do, what they're actually forbidden to do. Now, again, it's not all bad. I've focused a lot of the aftermath, but there have been small pockets of freedom popping up. For example, the Supreme Court of Texas threw out a contempt order against a small business owner who was jailed last year for refusing to close her business to comply with these quote-unquote pandemic-related restrictions. Anybody remember Shelley Luther? The salon owner that stood before a judge and said, if you think it's more important to follow your rules than to feed children, if you think feeding children is selfish, you go do what you got to do. The court found that the temporary restraining order against Ms. Luther failed to set forth the conduct required and the legal basis for its issuance in clear, specific, and unambiguous terms. Well, that's been most of these orders. So there are small things popping up. You have the state of Texas, their Supreme Court saying, no, this is ridiculous. You have Minnesota with a bill that aims to ban vaccine passports. You have Governor Abbott issuing an executive order banning vaccine passports. That has questionable. That's dubiously legal unless he's looking at saying vaccine passports are unconstitutional. That would make sense. It would prevent the executive branch from enforcing them. My home state now, Tennessee, passed a bill prohibiting governments from classifying business and workers as essential or non-essential. One of the most disgusting things to come out of the early pandemic was this concept of essential businesses and non-essential businesses. Every business is essential to someone. And how dare any government actor claim to have the authority to determine what is and isn't essential, what is essential to you and your family. To say that you, your job, your income is not essential. That is disgusting. That should be cause for immediate removal, whatever the process is for that office. Yet we saw that happen across the nation. We saw states and cities saying, you're not essential, you're not essential, you're not essential. The Supreme Court recently issued an order preventing California from applying restrictions on certain religious gatherings, on certain forms of worship. They said because it violated the First Amendment. How about it violated their right to live at liberty? How about the state has no authority to tell people how to live their life, to tell them that going to church or going to mosque or going to synagogue is not essential? How about you tell them that? A judge overturned DC's capacity limits on religious gatherings. Same thing. How about you look at and say, government, you have, show me where you have the authority to do this. No, then not only is your order overturned, how about we start investigating these people for the crimes they are committing? How about we do that? Remember, 18 U.S.C. 242. Anyone under color of law deprives someone of a liberty, of a right protected by the laws or Constitution of the United States, has committed a federal crime, punishable by a fine of up to 1 year in jail. When are we going to start enforcing that law? States, when are you going to start enforcing your own laws? When are you going to start punishing these tyrants for taking, stealing the rights of the citizens of your state? When? See, it's one thing to turn around and say, we're going to ban vaccine passports. Like it's Montana, they're on the list too. Or Kansas and Missouri having their governor saying they're not going to implement vaccine passports. That's fine. But when these tyrants show themselves, how about we start punishing them for it? In the Declaration of Independence, we read, "But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under utter despotism, it is the right, it is the duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." Well, we certainly have evidence. We see a long train of abuses in many of our states. In fact, in most of our states, we see usurpations in almost all of the 50 states. And invariably, it's the same thing: to reduce the American people to subjects under government, to serfs, to servants, rather than free citizens. What happens when that long train of abuses and usurpations isn't happening back in 1776? It's happening in 2020 and 2021. What are we to do? The signers of the Declaration said it is not only our right, it is our duty to overthrow that government. Now, we can do it one of two ways. We can do it at the ballot box, or we can do it on the battlefield. I pray we choose the former rather than the latter, or our children will curse us for our unwillingness to protect our rights and theirs. Now, you can find more about my show and get the latest podcasts if you go to the menu under AmericaOutLoud.com, look under our shows or under schedule. You'll find the Constitution Study. You can also head to ConstitutionStudy.com. And I look forward to our next meeting right here at the Constitution Study.